is that time?
I wish our plant facility could fix this.
Maybe I'll just turn on at once.
Yeah.
Turn on at once.
Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Jones?
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Here. If you will join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item on the agenda is consent agenda.
Mayor, I just had a disclosure on here, page 9 of the payables, capital paving, expenses for a repair in front of my residence. When I had pressurized irrigation installed 10 years ago, they cut the asphalt, backfilled it with dirt and gravel, and that deteriorated, so they came out and paved that front of that of my residence. So it's related to pressurized irrigation, but it is in front of my where I live.
Okay, thank you. Anything further?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And I'm sorry, Chris, would you poll the council on that one?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you. Community reports. ACHD roadways to bikeways. Master plan update. Brooke Green. Thank you.
So, thank you for the introduction. Brooke Green, Senior Transportation Planner with ACHD. This is my first time out in CUNA, so as normal, you see David here, so he's allowed me to come in his place for this evening and for this presentation. So I'm thrilled to be here this evening. I'm going to provide you an informational briefing on our current update to the Roadways to Bikeways Master Plan. This is an addendum to our existing 2009 plan, and I'm going to go ahead and highlight what it is since 2009 we have accomplished, in addition, briefly discuss what you can anticipate this year. So next slide, please. I'll just say slides as we go along and follow along. The 2009 Roadways to Bikeways Plan was ACHD's foundation document. It was to provide broad vision, policy goals, and in addition, objectives for how at ACHD we can implement and enhance our bicycle facilities. The 2009 plan took a look at the existing roadway network in an effort to make recommendations to enhance and expand our existing on-street bicycle network, address any gaps in our bicycle network, address constrained areas, and it was primarily for us to identify where it is that we can build upon our existing foundation and enhance it for those looking to ride on our facilities. Next slide. Since the 2009 adoption of the plan, we have been incorporating these implementation strategies into our operations. As a result, we've seen an increase of 121 bike lane miles, making a total throughout all of Ada County 330 bike lane miles. In addition to the bike lane miles, we've initiated the well-known neighborhood bike and pedestrian plans, have adopted a complete streets policy, planned and built ACHG's first bikeway project, and lastly, initiated the roadways to bikeways update within the recommended 10-year window. Up there in the slides, you can see some other enhancements that occurred as a result of our planning efforts. Another effort that we were able to do was install wayfinding signage. This is for folks who are looking to navigate into their neighborhoods and being able to find a way to get from point A to point B through signage and not necessarily bike lanes. So that's another enhancement that you can see there in the slide. Next slide. The Roadways to Bikeways update will assess our progress in achieving the goals, objectives, and action items identified in the previous plan. In addition, we're looking at the creation of performance measures that will assist us in evaluating how well we are doing in implementation of our bikeway facilities, our bikeway plan. Some other bikeway plan updates, the purpose above, you can see. One of the things we also want to evaluate is emerging trends and technology. What it is, we would like to evaluate what it is that other communities like size are doing to enhance their bike facilities and take that information and incorporate it here in Ada County. Next slide. We have multiple key deliverables out of this. Besides just updating that existing 2009 plan, I mentioned we'd like to go ahead and establish some performance measures that will keep ACHD accountable to the projects that we're moving forward. We want to also make recommendations for an updated system of low-stress network. This includes evaluating roadways that folks may feel more comfortable on as opposed to our arterials and collectors where our bike lane facilities are. I'm going to go into that here in more depth in a moment. Like I mentioned, I want to highlight new technology, emerging treatment types, and best practices that are occurring elsewhere here in the United States. And lastly, clearly defined prioritized projects. We work with your staff to identify projects to put forward for implementation here in CUNA. So ideally, what we'd like this project and this plan to do is produce prioritized projects that we can bring to the city of CUNA to look at and evaluate. Are these ones that are complementary in your efforts in enhancing your network? And lastly, sorry, the annual report template, and I'll go over that here in a moment. In evaluating the 2009 goals, our team wanted to emphasize parts of the language to complement our objectives. And so you see two goals there within the slide. First, complete and maintain a bicycle facility network that maximizes safety, provides connectivity, and supports the bicycle as a viable transportation option. So what is in orange is some things that we highlighted as we were redoing these goals. Second goal was promote bicycle safety and increase the bicycling here within Ada County and our six cities. Next slide. We had four objectives as we approached this planning effort. The first objective, implement the Roadways to Bikeways recommended bikeway network to support bicycling as a viable transportation option. This includes our network build-out. We have a goal where 25% of our population has access to some type of bike facility. This could either be a bike lane, this could be shared use spaces such as with Sharrows. In addition, it could be wayfinding neighborhood routes. But what we want is 25% of our population to be able to get out on our roadways, feel comfortable, and get from point A to point B. Access is another piece that we're evaluating, and that was that point A to point B. What are we doing to maximize our environment to allow people to get out there and utilize our infrastructure? Connectivity, and lastly, funding. What funding mechanisms are we using to implement our planning process? A lot of our funding, as it pertains to bike enhancements, comes out of our community programs, which you are quite familiar with when you put forward projects in your integrated five-year work plan request. Next slide. Our second objective, maintaining bicycle routes in a state of good repair in order to ensure are consistently used, are available for use. And this includes painting and sweeping. We recognize that we had a very strong winter and we spent a lot of time putting some sand on our roadways. Well, now we need to go back and evaluate how are we out there making those facilities usable? Are we sweeping them? And what is the measure associated with that? I'll speak specifically to the performance measures, where I talk specifically about sweeping and capturing that data. Next slide. The third objective, promote awareness of existing bicycle routes and features and support encouragement programs. So we utilize our bicycle maps to be able to convey to the public routes that they could use to get out. In addition to that, we are leveraging Commuter Ride, which is a service through ACHD, to help us communicate to our businesses what transportation options are available to them. Through Commuter Ride, we're able to get out and discuss specifically to businesses when we implement new facility treatments, such as a green box. If you've seen them in downtown, it's a space where cyclists can get out in front of cars. But when we put those, when we implement those, a lot of people have no idea what that is. So by leveraging our relationship and our partnership with Commuter Ride, we can go out to the businesses and help communicate those new treatment options as we put them forward. In addition, we want to support nonprofits, nonprofits that are already out there having these conversations with the public. Safe Routes to School, the Treasure Valley YMCA, these are locations that we know that we can partner with and help communicate out to the public about bicycle safety, getting the maps out there, the bicycle lights that we provide, but leveraging that relationship so that way it's beneficial for everyone and actually supporting them in their efforts. Next page. Objective number four, facilitate coordination and cooperation among local jurisdiction in implementing the roadways to bikeways recommendation. And we see this often through our local planning efforts, such as our neighborhood bike and pedestrian plans, where we can actually get out at the neighborhood level and talk to folks and help. They can help us identify what are barriers that are keeping them from being able to get out onto the streets. Next page. As I mentioned earlier, so we've identified our goals and objectives. We want to roll this into an annual report, and this annual report primarily is our performance measures. And as you can see here, this is just a draft. But this document will help us communicate to the public as well as to our elected officials, our progress in funding, our network build out. How are we building out that network? Is it connected? We want to address safety. I mentioned briefly about maintenance, about getting out and sweeping those roadways. How often are we doing that? And can we measure and report it out? And lastly, our progress in local planning efforts. What are we doing to implement these projects? And are we incorporating them into our capital projects? When a capital project comes forward about evaluating roadways, are we including and incorporating bicycle pedestrian enhancements? And what does that look like? And can we capture that? So this is just a draft. This is, you know, a mock-up currently. It's likely to change through this planning process, but it gives you a general idea of how we're going to convey that message to the public. In addition to creating performance measures and our annual report, we're currently looking at the evaluation of low-stress networks. So a low-stress network, what it is it's a space that cyclists, those who want to get out on the roadway, can feel comfortable. So much of 2009 work was really about creating the foundation of bike facilities throughout Ada County, the bike lanes, the sharrows, the wayfinding signs. Some of our network truly appeals to those on the lower half. So within your graph, you're seeing the 100%, the no way, no how folks, all the way down to the enthused and confident. We recognize that some of our facilities may be generally for the enthused and confident. So we're trying to evaluate a low-stress network that enables us to create an environment and maximize that environment for folks who may fall in that top tier, that no way, no how. And likely that's to occur in your neighborhoods. So it's helping people navigate through your neighborhoods to get them from point A to point B or a neighborhood attractor such as a park or a school. Next page. We're currently examining all of Ada County streets and assigning a score that aligns with that particular user type. So as you see here in the graph above, the low stress network, as we low stress 1, 2, 3, and 4, 4 being that most confident riders, 1 being most people, including children, can cross the intersection on their own. So our maps that we're utilizing right now, and you'll see it on the next slide, we took all of Ada County, took all of the roads, and assigned these levels to those roadways. And then last night, Wava from CUNA was there, Greta from CUNA was there. The public came and we invited them to help participate in helping us identify, is this correct? Is the low stress network that we identified on the maps truly what the public and the communities are actually out there using? So Wava and Greta came out. They spent some time on a map that was specific to CUNA and connections into Boise. And they highlighted areas on the map that, yes, this is a low stress network, or no, you know what? The reality is this isn't really comfortable, but you have it highlighted as an LTS 1. So we went ahead, next slide, in analyzing our network, we took a couple factors into consideration. The number of vehicle travel lanes, bike facility types, posted speeds on the roadway, adjacent parking and bike lanes, volumes of traffic, and lastly, roadway classification. So our map was primarily based off of this type of data. It wasn't really based off a person actually out there writing it. And so that's why we invited the public to come back to us. Let us know, did we master that? Is this what is reflected in the maps? Or are there areas that we could improve and enhance? The goal of this analysis, I mentioned, is to identify where there's gaps also in our current network. We want to examine locations where we could probably get you to somewhere through a low-stress network and you get to an intersection and it's not comfortable. So that we'd consider a gap. So we'd like to go back and evaluate that gap. Can we enhance that intersection to get people through and continue on a low-stress network through another neighborhood? So these were all pieces of the puzzle that we put into these maps. That way, the NGRETA both participated in helping us identify here for CUNA. And we'll come back at a second time with all of that analysis and all the public input. Next slide. So as I mentioned in here, we are currently in the process of agency presentations and interviews, and I want to thank you. As I was on my way last time to present to you, I hit the storm and was off on the side of the interstate. So thank you for the accommodations. I wanted to be here a little bit earlier in this process. But kudos, we were thrilled to have both WAVA and Greta attend our public open house last night. And of course, WAVA does sit in on our bike advisory committee. Right. And our bike advisory committee happens to be the technical team for this. But thank you for making that accommodations for me to come back a second time. When I'm done this evening and we move forward, we're going to do an analysis of all the public input that we received from last night and those who mailed us in their comments. We'll come back again, ideally in July. We'd like to share with you what we heard from the public. In addition, in the meantime, between now and July, we've continued to work with your staff to help identify any other locations that we may have missed. The reality is CUNA's growing. You've got a lot of new development that's coming in, and so recognizing our low-stress network is likely through some of those neighborhoods, we want to evaluate and see, can we make connection to those neighborhoods and connect them to our tolls and collectors where we have bike lanes. But ideally, we want people to feel comfortable out on our roadways, and we know that this approach is likely to appeal to more of your general public who want to get out for that leisurely ride. So this concludes my presentation. I'll stand for questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions for Brooke?
Mayor, I have a couple questions. As far as when you have finalized map, is that something that will be available to the public and that is going to show the stress levels that you're talking about so they can look at it and say, well, we can take the kids this route because it's low stress, or is it going to be the stress levels not public?
So right now, the analysis that we've done right now is public, and people are able to give feedback. The map that we're using, the network that we want to build out after this, will not necessarily show low stress network. It will show neighborhood routes. And so it's all about the semantics, is how are we going to term these so that the general public feel comfortable. And so being able to create that branding that goes associated with those routes. But right now we call them neighborhood routes. They are identified through our existing planning efforts on our actual new release of the bike map. And so we'll fold that into it. But it's ideally for locations, and on the legend it'll say this is a route that is very comfortable for people, you know, low speeds.
Yeah,
and so, yeah, we'll highlight it on our existing map. Granted, our map doesn't update. We only do an update every 2 years. However, we do now have an online map that you can go to that download that will update accordingly on there so we can get the message out to people.
And the other question I have is, there are areas that are lacking bike lanes. But they may not be something that is scheduled or even looked at in the near future to be added because there's going to be no development there or any additional widening of lanes. How does ACHD determine a priority to put a bike lane in there that pretty much that's all you're going to do is spend that funding for the bike lane? I mean, how does that rate over areas that need road work compared to bike lanes?
So we take a lot of our direction through our integrated five-year work plan requests. And so specifically from your community, when you put forward projects, either you either put them forward in a community programs request, which is your bike and pedestrian facilities, or you put them forward in a capital request, and that's the other piece of the integrated five-year work plan. That's how we do the prioritization at the request of the cities. However, when we do chip seal and we're going through and we're going to redo painting for whatever reason, we'll go back and look, can we squeeze in a bike lane? You know, every single time that we're looking at enhancing maintenance on a roadway, and it just happens to be that time, we're going to look and see, is an opportunity to provide additional connection through that paint on the road. But when it comes to the project itself, a big capital project or a maintenance project, we're going to look at opportunities to do enhancements as we're doing them. If it's a specific request, something the city would like to see, you certainly can contact us. We'll go back and evaluate it. Seldom do we go out and paint, you know, because it was requested to paint it on the roadways. It's usually through a maintenance project or through a capital project. Unless the city wants to, you know, evaluate a bicycle boulevard or would like to take on a more specific project specific to bike enhancements for a particular area, we'll come in and do that at the request of the city.
Okay, so primarily,
it's the city making the prioritization.
All right, thank you.
And a lot of our comment from that comes from our citizen advisor, which is Wava Kaufman. She's been, I don't even know how long she's been doing that, but Mayor Nelson appointed her 3-4 years ago, I suppose.
Yeah, she's been so instrumental representing your community and being able to highlight areas for improvement, especially when you have new development come in. She's aware of, you know, is there going to be a movie theater, is there going to be YMCA, and what do we need to go and evaluate? So she's been a great team member, and we appreciate having her on board.
Good. Further questions? Brooke, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much. And again, thank you for the accommodation so I can come back and visit. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you. Next, we have Valley Regional Transit FY 2018 budget request presentation. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members, oh, don't touch the microphone. Sorry. You almost touched it. Of course, as soon as you see the sign.
Anytime it says do not touch the microphone, that means you want to touch it.
It's like I'm glad it wasn't something frozen.
That's right.
Don't put your tongue on this. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you today. We're going to tag team our presentation. As many of you are aware, Valley Regional Transit has been working with your Economic Development Committee to take a much deeper look in our planning process. What we call Valley Connect 2.0 is our plan update at the city of CUNA and identifying the community's interests in public transportation. We see this as kind of a two-year process. This year we're identifying and designing some conceptual services with the idea then that we would go out and try to seek funding for that through federal grants and work with the city on local funds that you may want to put towards that. But until you know what it is we're proposing, you know, it's hard to be able to plan for that. So that's really the what we're doing here. So if we could go to the next slide. And Chris, is there a way for me to control that, or I just have you down? That's great, thanks. So just kind of thinking about what the philosophy that we have with public transportation as we're planning for these is that it is a public good. It's a public service. We think of it similarly to schools or utilities, libraries, roads, that it provides one of life's necessities, transportation. And we have been out in the community working with folks, talking to leaders, and we've just completed a survey to better understand what those needs are. A little bit of background, next slide, about Valley Regional Transit. We are a regional public transportation authority. We're in code accountable to local governments, and your mayor sits on our board and acts as your representative and your community's representative. We take that role very seriously, and that's why we've been spending a lot of time really learning about what's important to CUNA so we can design service concepts for you to consider that really are going to meet the needs. We also, in those interviews, what we spent a lot of time talking about wasn't just transportation. It was really important for me to find out what's important to CUNA. What are the projects? What are your trends? What are the things that you see? And what was really interesting to me is how common the comments were, that there was a lot of similarity, which is nice because if your community is aligning around certain concepts, it's easier for us to build transportation that meets those alignments rather than if you've got lots of people saying, well, it's this need or that need, that's a little harder to serve. So I was really excited about that. We can go to the next slide. Valley Regional Transit has had our strategic plan. We've been seeking to secure stable funding. Idaho is one of two states that does not have a dedicated funding source, so we rely on our partnerships with local governments to provide those services. We also rely on partnerships with nonprofits, and we've been working closely with the CUNA Senior Center to try to expand services for people, older adults here, and have been working with other organizations as we try to expand opportunities for transportation in the region. We do this also by being good stewards of public dollars and being able to demonstrate that, building those community partnerships and improving our capacity to deliver on those services. As we were reaching out, we can go to the next slide. This is our existing services, and as you can see, CUNA's doesn't have any traditional fixed route services. As I mentioned, we have some of our community-based services that are coming out here. ACHD Commuter Ride has been serving CUNA for a lot of years. We've been working jointly with your newest major employer to try to address some of the job access issues and employee transportation issues as well, with some of the trying to bring about some transportation options. But in looking at how to build more traditional services for CUNA, we so far have had about 58 respondents to a survey that we put out a couple weeks ago. We're still getting new responses, so at a point where we feel like we're not getting any new responses, we'll shut that off, and we're going to bring those back to the Economic Development Committee and share some of those. A couple of high-level things that we're hearing. When we ask people about their non-work and non-school destinations, grocery stores were one of the top, and those were then after the grocery stores, Walmart, Costco, in Meridian were also identified. And then St. Luke's and Winco and the Village, restaurants, and really access is what people were looking for to these destinations. And that came out a lot in the interviews too, that you know there's a recognition that CUNA is growing more commercial, and that you expect as a trend to see more commercial. In the meantime, people need to be able to get to those destinations. So we really need to have a system that respects not only helping people get to where they want to go, but eventually bringing people to CUNA where they might want to enjoy some of the amenities and the commercial development that your community's developing. So it turned out that the most common answer from people for times of day, which actually surprises me a little, is 9 a.m. to noon, which means we may have had a lot of retired folks respond to the survey. We'll kind of look at some of those demographics too. And that a lot of people, it's not going to come as a surprise, the work destinations have been primarily in Boise, so we need to think about that. Really, the main point I'm trying to make is that we are listening to what your citizens want, and we're going to design services based on that. I'm going to have Stephen come up. He's our new regional planning manager. And he has been doing some work looking at peer communities that we can reflect on, how those organizations are served or those communities serve their needs. And then also some concepts for how we can make some of those connections that we're hearing people want to make. So I'll let Stephen come up and finish that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Again, my name is Stephen Hunt, and just two words of introduction. So I grew up here. I went to Meridian High School. I grew up in the Treasure Valley. Went to Meridian High School and began my transit career at Valley Regional Transit back in 2003, and then went to graduate school and have been working for the last 9 years in the city of Seattle on King County Metro Transit. And I am very excited to be back home and working on how to make transit a bigger part of people's lives in the Treasure Valley. So excited. So one of the things that I'm really excited about doing is talking about what's possible with transit. And as we look at peers, we're going to introduce two different kinds of peers. Peers to BRT as a whole and peers to CUNA, and how different cities, the size of CUNA and kind of the orientation of CUNA to the other regional centers, what kind of transit connections those have. But just one bit of context, so we work with Compass on projections for the future, both for employment and population and the size of the transit system. That's through a planning process called Communities in Motion. And when we look at the amount of service that is being planned for in the Communities in Motion plan, there's a lot of opportunity for growth in transit. And what this map represents on the slide here is how transit could grow across the Treasure Valley if we had the resources to have a system roughly the size that Communities in Motion says we should have in 2025. And so that's a system of about 45, million dollars a year in annual operating. So it's much bigger than what we have today. But we're going to talk about how that compares to other cities and areas similar to the Treasure Valley. So next slide. So this is the handout that you have in front of you. This is a peer comparison to the Treasure to VRT, and we looked at four other transit agencies across the country, four different states in Washington, Nevada, Arizona, and Wisconsin. And what a couple things that we'll talk about is we looked both at the system size and amount of people that were being carried, as well as the investment per capita. So that's that last column over there. And if you look at VRT, where we invest about $27 per person per year in annual operating costs. And if you compare that to any of the four peers there, it's about a fourth or a fifth of what our peers are investing in per capita annual operating costs. And the reason that this is so interesting is because if you just flip that around and say, what would be possible if we as a region invested the same amount per capita as those other regions, we would have a system that's roughly the size of the Communities in Motion plan. So you'd have almost 500,000 hours of service, which may not mean a lot to you all, but we're about at 100,000, just over 100,000 a year today. And so it's a significant opportunity for growth. And so that's what I'm excited about talking about. Next slide. A couple other points that I wanted to make about this, what happens when you make this kind of investment. So the next two slides show that as you invest in transit, you see both improvements in productivity as well as in a reduction in operating costs per person. And I mean, those two are related, but it's fun to see how they chart out. So this is, again, looking at BRT compared to those peers, and the red dashed line is the annual per capita operating investment, and the blue line is the boardings per hour. So that's the productivity of service. And what's interesting to note is that as you increase that annual operating cost, productivity tends to go up because you're able to provide more service that becomes more useful to people, right? So there's kind of like a hurdle you've got to get over initially before it becomes useful enough for people to be for more people to be using to more destinations. And that's borne out with these examples. Next slide. You can see what that means from a cost effectiveness perspective. Again, VRT is on the left, and it's marking the operating cost per capita investment compared to the cost per trip or cost per boarding. How much does it cost per trip? And that has an inverse relationship to the cost that you invest per person. So as you invest more, the cost per rider goes down because you're able to get more people on that service. And so those are two interesting things for us to think about as a region when we think about how are we trying to invest and prioritize our transportation investments. So wanted to talk now about a couple of QNUP here examples. And so we're going to look at, I think it's three. In Reno, outside of Reno, there are several communities called the North Valleys. They're about 10 miles kind of northwest of downtown Reno. They together have a population of 15 to 20,000. And they are connected and that's the map shows kind of where the North Valleys are. If you go to the next slide, you can see that they are connected with two different kinds of services that go out into the North Valleys. They have 60-minute service, 30-minute service all day out to, and there is an airport out there, right? So there are kind of larger destinations to go out there. But they have 30-minute service all day out to the airport, and they also have 60-minute service to one of those valley communities called Lemon Valley, which has a population of about 5,000. So smaller communities farther out from the main centers. Reno was one of the examples we looked at for our VRT peers. When you have enough investment, you can make good quality connections to communities such as Kena. Next slide. Another example, again from the VRT sort of peer list, is Spokane. And there are two. Spokane has communities kind of on either end that are more than 10 miles away from downtown Spokane. One is called Liberty Lake, and that's to the east of downtown Spokane towards Idaho, right near the Idaho border. And it has about 10,000 people. If you go to the next slide, you can see that it's connected with, it has all-day service as well as peak-oriented service into the downtown Spokane. It's right along I-90, and that's what a lot of the connection between Liberty Lake and downtown Spokane is, using that express type of connection on the freeway. The other community is Cheney, down southwest of downtown Spokane. And again, it has a pretty large center, which is the Eastern Washington University. But Cheney is a community of about 17,000, and it also has all-day and peak-only service. If you go to the next slide, you can see the connections between downtown Cheney and Spokane. Because it has the university there, it has connections actually to go to multiple places, not just to downtown Spokane, but into North Spokane and out onto the east side of the community. Medical Lake is another one that I didn't highlight, but it's just to the kind of the north of Cheney. That's those other two blue lines going out there. Another small community, more than 15 miles from downtown Spokane. And they're all connected by transit. I'm just throwing out these examples to say it's certainly possible to serve communities like this with their orientation towards a larger metropolitan center. The last example actually is not in the BRT peer list. If you go to the next slide, this is in Little Rock, Arkansas. But it's an interesting example because Maumela is a relatively new development. It grew from not as fast as CUNA, but it grew from 7,000 in 1990 to 18,000, roughly 18,000 today. It's a relatively affluent community about 16 miles from downtown Spokane. If you go to the next slide, you can see that they have made a commitment to serving that community with, again, express service to the downtown core. As well as, well, I'm sorry, it has 30-minute peak service and a 60-minute peak service. So that's exciting to think about the possibilities of how CUNA could be connected. And it's certainly many examples of similar communities being connected to their regional centers. Next slide. Kelly already went through these. We have done several studies out in CUNA, and we've added to that most recently with this latest survey, as well as the leadership surveys that interviews that Kelly has done. And these kind of three themes have come up both previously and were reaffirmed in our most recent outreach, which is the important transportation priorities for transit anyways are making that commuter connection, connecting youth to youth activities, as well as making sure that older adults have the connections that they need. And so how do you do that? If you go to the next slide, this is from, again, a previous study, but it shows forecasted trip distribution between CUNA and the other communities. So this is forecast for in the peak hour in the year 2035, but I think it's indicative of the type of travel that you see even today. That, and what the percentages show is that 21% of the travel in the peak hour occurs within the city of CUNA, and then you have 17% going to Meridian, 13% going to Boise, with only 3% going to downtown Boise, and 23% actually going out to Canyon County as a whole, right? So that may be equally dispersed in Canyon County, but 23% of the peak period travel in CUNA is headed out to Canyon County. So how do you make transit work in that kind of connection, or with those kinds of demands? And there are two. What we've done with the Valley Connects plan is we're refreshing kind of how CUNA and the region is connected by transit. And so we've looked at some of those previous studies. And so I'm going to show a couple of examples of how we might connect CUNA in the future. And we'll be looking for feedback kind of over time as we continue with the Valley Connects program. So the first one, next slide, is kind of a basic connection between downtown CUNA and Meridian, where you can still take advantage of the intercounty connections in Meridian. And also, and this is fairly typical, you may have noticed it in some of the peer examples, on longer kind of trips like this, you often have some kind of local circulation at the tail end, right? And so that's what we're trying to do. You can see some of that circulation through CUNA, starting Spar West is 10 Mile, going through downtown over to K Street and up by the high school, and then back to Linder, passing the newer developments along Linder and Hubbard before heading out on CUNA Meridian Road. But so you can see how it could make those connections for the commuter folks, whether they're connecting then to services that go into downtown or out to Canyon County, because that those intercounty services go both directions. It also continues into downtown Meridian, making connections at the village, making connection going by the Roaring Springs on Overland, and then continuing on to the ending roughly at the YMCA off of Chinden. So the idea is, even if it's an express type of service where it doesn't stop all that often, if you ran it, so then we talk about span, when is the service available? It becomes a service that is attractive not just for commuter, but also for the other types of activities that were discussed and brought up in some of our public comments. In addition, the other thing to think about with this is, with all transportation, what you're doing is you're connecting communities. And so it becomes a question not just of what can we do for CUNA, but how do we integrate CUNA's needs with the needs of Meridian and with the needs of Boise and make a connection that works for everybody. And so this becomes an important connection within Meridian itself, right? So we're able to leverage both the investments of the interest investment of the city of CUNA with Meridian and Boise. So another concept, next slide, would be to connect with the downtown core. So this would, again, the basic connection between CUNA and Meridian would remain the same, but instead of serving the centers in Meridian, you could jump on the freeway and make your connections to downtown Boise. This again becomes of interest to the city of Meridian, because you'd end up providing an express option for folks in Meridian to also make that connection. And all of that is to the advantage of CUNA and the other communities, right? Because it becomes an interest not just to you, but to the whole region. And so those are two of the concepts that we could think about for how the city of CUNA could be connected to the rest of the region. But that's only part of it. The last slide that talks about these connections that I want to point out, so if you go to the next slide, would be, in addition to changes with service to CUNA, we are talking about how the rest of the communities are served. How do we expand that connection? So let's say you have the option that goes into downtown Meridian and then continues on to the village. The other conversations that we're having with the city of Boise would be extending service from the city of Boise out to the village. This is an example of using USTIC to make that connection. So headed out USTIC, you can make the connection at the village. And so now CUNA residents, Meridian residents, would be not only connected to the village, but that whole wing of Boise, right? So these are the types of conversations that we're having with the communities across the Treasure Valley to see how better can we connect each of these different communities and improve the overall transit network. Next slide. So that brings us back to all of our visions for what we can do with transit are about connecting the communities better to one another. And what's exciting to me about both presenting this information and also having done the research is that the types of connections that people are asking for are definitely possible. There's nothing unique about our area that will make this not work here. The only thing that is unique is the level of investment that we have put towards public transit. And so as we as a region think about how we want to make those investments and how we want to help facilitate people achieving their goals in life, that's what becomes the interesting conversation to me, and why we're excited about talking about how we connect the communities across the Treasure Valley. And I guess there's one more slide, which is, so as we, what I would be most interested in getting from you all even tonight, is some additional feedback about the types of connections that we're envisioning with CUNA, but also recognize that as we continue with the development of Valley Connects 2.0, we're very keen on getting input from the city of CUNA, thinking about where is development happening. Are these types of connections the ones that we want to go forward with, and how can we support that with both roadway investments as well as development investments that support one another? So that's all I have. Appreciate it.
Okay, very good.
Anybody
may have any questions? Yep. For
Mayor, I just have one question. You discussed a survey. Is that still an open survey, and is it open to the public?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Council Member, we have that as a Survey Monkey. We sent a link to Chris, but we've also put it out with the schools. What we'll do is resend that, and then maybe to each of you, if you have a network of people that you want to send it out to, because you know, we'll leave it open. Our deadline was to try to have a report for the Economic Development Committee in July, so we can take input all through June and be able to meet that deadline. So, yeah, it'd be great if you know of groups that would like to comment. I believe we were going to try to put it out on Nextdoor and Facebook. I'm not sure.
We did. We posted it out on social media as well as Nextdoor.
Yeah. So, we'd like to, and probably maybe do a reminder and let people know it's out there. And
I think a reminder would definitely help.
Yeah, we can boost it out again.
Yeah,
and we've really appreciated the support of the mayor and the staff. I mean, this really has been a fun project to work on, and I had the opportunity to interview Councilmember Bubam Vanderhaar, and it was really, it just was fun to find out what's important to people in CUNA.
Well, I'd like to, let everybody know how much I appreciate what you've done since you and I really started talking about this and what the possibilities are for CUNA, because we've always kind of looked at that loop that serves Boise and Meridian and Nampa and Caldwell, and we're not in that loop, we're off to the side, so that didn't really make sense to me how we can serve that area. But as you've really gotten into this and done an extreme amount of work trying to put something together, that it's kind of all making sense. And I also appreciate the Economic Development Committee and the time they've put into it. So thank you very much.
Well, I told Stephen that you all met 90% of the criteria for us to do this, you know, deep dive in your community, and that was your mayor expressed an interest. So that's really a big part of the push, is that the city of CUNA needs to be interested in this as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next item we have is public hearing, consideration to approve 17-01ZC rezone and 17-01S pre-plat for Caspian subdivision. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone who didn't get a chance to sign up to testify on the sheets out front that would like to do so? Okay. Then what we'll do is I'll have our staff member come up and introduce, and then you can have the applicant give a presentation, and then we'll open it up for public comment. We'll limit those to 3-minute comments, and the applicant will have 10 minutes. So, Troy?
Evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. The project that you are about to hear the request from David Crawford, who's representing Tim Eck and Justin Blackstock, is the Caspian subdivision. Just by way of introduction, this is a request for a rezone over 107 acres and a subdivision pre-plat for an additional 25 acres or 26 acres approximately. And the subdivision that they're proposing is 494 lots. It has 68 common lots and is located on the north side of Lake Hazel between 10 Mile and Linder Roads. And zoning that they're seeking a rezone on is from a public zone to medium density residential, which is an R6. And with that, I'll turn it over to the applicant for their presentation.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure you know the drill, if you'll state your name and address for the record.
Mayor, council members, my name is David Crawford. I'm with B&A Engineers. My address is 5505 West Franklin Road in Boise. And I'd like to present the United Caspian subdivision. And as you know, I was sitting out there in the audience, I was recognizing, you know, it was interesting to hear from the different public entities out here with Valley Transit and Dade County Highway District and all the planning and stuff that goes into all these more public transportation issues. And what I believe we bring tonight is our part of this growth that's occurring out in CUNA. We're providing our job from the private side is to provide for public services being disseminated to every lot in the development, to plan in accordance with the highway district, the roadways that occur through there, open space, and many other items that go in there. We've worked with city staff throughout the life of this development to move forward in accordance with the CUNA city codes and ordinances, and we believe we've presented that here tonight. Excuse me. We did present this to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we heard what the Planning and Zoning Commission said, input from the neighbors, and we provided, from its initial inception, we provided for additional pathway connectivity areas to a common open space lot here in the west side of the development that you can see on that color map. It's probably not huge. It was really big when I printed out at the office, but looking here, it's not so big. But that little spot right there is about a half acre of land. And we have also connected that over to the east part of the development. There's a large utility transmission corridor, which we've tried to turn a liability into an asset by adding some pathways through there as well. And these all are interconnected throughout the development to allow for pedestrian connectivity through these areas through. You can see how we've taken some larger areas and connected them through different parts of the site to allow better pedestrian connectivity over there. We hope that this will become part of a larger corridor which will exist through other developments where this transmission corridor is south and east and north and west as CUNA grows. What you see here tonight is a realization of months of planning and input from many people, and we've accommodated for all the transportation needs that the Highway District's identified within in its plan, the requirements that we have from our traffic impact study. And we're also pleased to note that with the building permits of these homes that we're presenting here, that they'll pay for the new CUNA impact fees related to parks, and they also pay for transportation fees related to the Ada County Highway District. We believe that we've got a development that's consistent with the R6 zoning that's required. It's actually less than 6 units per acre. We're sitting around 3.7 units per acre. And the only reason we asked for R6 is because of the lot frontage requirements. That's really what we need. We have 7,000 square foot lots to 12,000 square foot lots. The larger lots typically exist around the corridor, around the perimeter of these cul-de-sacs, just due to the nature of the way we have to develop those off the frontages of the roadways. We believe we bring an attractive economic asset to the city of CUNA, and we're pleased to be part of doing our part as CUNA grows. And I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Okay, questions?
None right now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Back up here so soon. Just for the record, Troy B. Hunan, Planner 3, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department. As David has already stated and outlined their request for the rezone and the subdivision. I'm really not going to spend a lot of time on that. I just want to touch on just a few things that are technical in nature. Approximately 25 acres that was already mentioned tonight. I guess the 25 acres is already zoned R6, but it is requesting the subdivision approval for that land. And then the other 107 acres is requesting a rezone from the public to the R6, which this body, the council, actually designated this area as medium density, and the R6 fits squarely right in the middle of that zoning designation. The applicant has worked diligently and extensively with Ada County Highway District and CUNA's planning staff, along with the Public Works Department, in order to work out and plan for all of the necessary transportation components, related public utility requirements, and to make sure that city code was being followed according to the subdivision design requirements. So the applicant has provided staff everything that we've asked for, and in some cases they've actually gone the extra mile with providing additional stub streets that ACHD required, and the staff also pointed out that were needed due to code requirements. They've also provided a great amount of pedestrian connectivity, and because of the discussions that were held at the planning and zoning hearing earlier this year, the applicant did get rid of 3 home lots and incorporated that into an already existing open space, and now that is it's a small park on the west side of the project, which complements the effort for the pedestrian connectivity and all of the things that parks bring to subdivisions. Staff would like to point out that this project does follow the comprehensive plan that was adopted by council in August of 2015. And council noticed that this project actually does touch Linda Road on the east and 10 Mile on the west. Phase one of this project will actually begin from the west side of the project where it touches 10 Mile, and it will move to the east. It's also been contemplated that this area will certainly grow, and CUNA's efforts to provide public services to the area seem really spot on because of the growth that is actually taking place. And so it looks like the city of CUNA had a very nice crystal ball probably in 2007, 2008, because now we have this nice wastewater treatment plant on the 10-mile corridor, which feeds traffic right up to the 10-mile intersection interchange with I-84. Hopefully you've had a chance to read your packets. I know it was kind of a bigger packet. It is a very important and it's a very big subdivision, but it will certainly add a very nice element to this area of CUNA, and I would stand for any questions that you would have.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Troy? Okay, thank you, Troy. This is a public hearing. I have the sign-in sheet here. No one signed up to testify. Is there anyone who didn't get a chance to sign up who wishes to? Okay, yes, sir. Okay, and then you can just step up to the podium there, and if you would, just state your name and address for the record.
All right, my name is Jeremy Woodland. I'm at 1990 Jarvis Court, and I realize this growth is inevitable, but I don't like it, so I just wanted to state my opinion. It's going to add a lot of traffic to the area, and I believe it'll affect the value of my home, so that's why I'm in opposition to it. And that's basically all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Was there anyone else? I'll need you to sign in if you would. You can be in favor, neutral, or in opposition, whichever you would like there. Okay, yeah, and then if you would just step to the podium and state your name and address again for the record, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Carol Pettit. I just have a question about schools. So far there hasn't been anything planned for the kids. 500 houses, there's going to be a lot of children. There's not enough schooling here in Houston with all the beautiful schools they have.
I am not certain. Does anybody know, is that actually Meridian School District on that side?
It is West Ada.
West Ada School District, correct. The houses would be in the city limits. School district boundaries are not necessarily matching city boundaries. Same with fire district, because they are separate entities. And so as a city expands, actually Meridian annexed in clear to Columbia Road on the far side of Lake Hazel, that is in the school district for CUNA. So there's some boundary issues there, but they it's really not an issue because they're separate entities. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, anyone else? Yes. Okay, thank you.
My name's Allison Woodland, and I just wish that, I know that growth is going to happen. It's a beautiful area out there. I just wish they would, instead of building starter homes, upgrade a little bit, give people movement, room to move. Their houses are so close. It's just wide open, beautiful out there. When I tell people, people are developing there, they're like, oh, they're expecting lots that they can move in instead of be crammed in because of what is already out there, because of the type of homes out there already. So we just wish that they could come in, and if since they're going to come in, adapt to the area that's already there and give people some diversity and choice in buying. People don't want small lots all the time. That's what everybody's building right now. Give them some choice to buy a little bit bigger.
Okay, thank you very much. And so I would just mention that one thing that this particular developer and his associates have been doing is they have been upgrading the value of the homes that they've been putting in. The reason this is actually listed as an R6 and rather than an R4 is there's frontage measurements that are required. It really doesn't fall under an R6. It really follows under an R4 designation. They're a little less than that, so the lots are bigger. They are doing a better job with putting in some nicer homes. So, I know you would probably rather have bigger lots than that, but I just kind of wanted to relay the history that this developer actually has with us and the things that they are doing to try to make things better. So. I know that maybe doesn't make you feel a lot better, but Okay. Was there anyone else? Okay. If not, if we could have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That motion carries. It is time for debate for the council.
Mayor, Troy, I have some questions for you. And I don't know if you can answer this. Hopefully you can either direct to the right person. One of the things that I'm concerned about is the open spaces. And as far as my reasoning is, open spaces is the parks, not necessarily landscape buffers and those type of things. We showed on a plan that there was going to be a park in that area, and also where our bike path trails are, and they showed a park. And I know that that park is in that area where it was on the map. Is that what we were envisioning, though, is to have a half-acre park there? My concern is I haven't seen anything where we've talked about any regional parks or anything like that, and there's been a lot of discussion on amenities for kids, adults, and out there isn't a lot right now. So how do we – I'm trying to figure out where that's going to come into play as far as having a bigger park that you can actually play football, soccer, and stuff like that on. And like I said, I don't know if you can answer that or not, but my biggest question is regarding that map. Is that what we envision of a half-acre park?
I'm wondering if maybe Bobby wouldn't be better suited to answer the park questions for regional.
Mayor, Councilman Jones, to kind of, I'm going to try to answer your question, but it might sound really vague. I am working on trying to get a park up northern to help with all of the development that's going on up there. We just haven't found any land yet. And as far as a half-acre park, we really don't accept anything under 3 acres. So if it was going to be a pocket type of park, then it would have to go in the subdivision itself. But if the city's going to do it, we're going to do anything from 5 to 10 to 15 acres. But we are working on a plan to get something up there, yes.
And based on the recreation pathways map is the one I'm referring to. When I see a future park location, that's what we're envisioning, a larger regional park in that area. I mean, obviously, you can't put it right where the map says because we're not on the property, but is that what we're envisioning in the future of having a regional every time I see that on that map?
That was part of the – I do believe it was part of the comp plan when it was done a while back, and we do want to put one in that area, yes. And in the specific location that you see the little green spiky thingy, that just gives a general location. It's not specific. It's not site specific.
Okay.
Just to add to that, you'll notice that there's a lot of discussion that's been about pathways to and through this developer, but this project is committed to a very lengthy, nearly a half mile trail right there, in addition to other connection points through the subdivision. Those are intended to assist the city with avoiding tiny pocket parks that HOAs don't want to take care of in 5 or 6 years, that they want to walk away from. Those pathways are intended to lead people to the bigger spaces that, like Bobby was talking about. The mechanism that we now have to create that and to find that land is the $939 that we collect with every new home, which then funds the Parks and Rec fees, or Parks and Rec's coffers, so that they can find that and provide a larger space. But yeah, that is the goal. It's not necessarily a one-step thing. It's this leads to this, leads to this, boom, boom, boom.
I guess only my only point is I want to make sure that we as a city are looking at somehow prioritizing these regional parks and these areas that we're recommending or approving these large subdivisions.
The answer is so, yes.
Can that corridor, the power line corridor, is that landscaped or can that be landscaped?
It will be landscaped.
Okay,
It can only have grass.
Yeah, and yeah.
And pathways, but yes, it can be usable, will be usable open space, green open space.
Okay. Just some follow-up clarifications. Our comp plan is typically based on public input, as far as we tend to take public input of what the public wants to see, these what type of houses that we want in certain areas. And it's typically where we get our recommendation of how we develop our comp plan. You say that would be accurate?
I would say that adds to the conversation, yes.
But
if everybody had their choice, everybody would choose 5-acre lots, and the city couldn't withstand that.
But typically when we make that designation, public input is used to make those designations. So it's not just us as a city saying this is what we want here.
We are
taking public input.
Yes.
Yes. Fire Department's Meridian? Meridian Fire?
Yes.
Okay. And obviously we talked about the school, so we wouldn't need any input from them. I mean, I know that typically when they don't respond, they have no concerns with it. I'm trying to just to cover my basis of making sure that everybody that could have a concern with it has been addressed. Just trying to clarify that for the record is what I'm trying to do. I would assume city annexed, it's annexed into the city, CUNA police would be out there, not Ada County.
It is.
Okay.
It is under CUNA police, yeah.
And the developer follows all of our codes, and they follow everything. So they've done everything that we've asked them to do to put this in this area.
Okay. Yes.
I think that's all I have. Thank you. Chief? Go ahead. Sorry.
I have a question for you, Troy. I'm sure this was probably in the packet and I just missed it, but I noticed on page, it's very small, 25 of 123, it's like a picture of the whole subdivision with all the phases, and it looks like the park is supposed to be in phase 12. Is there an intent to wait until phase 12 to build the park, or might that go in earlier? For whoever might be able to answer it.
That might be a question for the applicant.
Okay.
Did you have another question?
Nope, that was it. Yeah, thank you. Sorry.
Mayor, council member, the phasing plan that you have in there is probably an old one.
It doesn't show a park, so I figured it was, yeah.
Yeah, so in the Planning Zoning Commission hearing, we did bring that in. I believe we're bringing that in along with the improvement into phase 3 or 4. So
okay.
It's way earlier in the development, so we could take advantage of those opportunities there.
Much appreciated. Yeah, that was one of my only concerns, was just having that amenity for early adopters. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Okay, anything further?
Chief, do you mind if I ask you a question? And I don't want to jump the gun here because you may have more information for us later on in budget, but you have no concerns about the area that we are developing as far as the size for your police officers to be able to cover in a...
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's something I've, you know, the two and a half months that I've had the new job. Definitely we've been discussing that with our leadership team at the police department. And in fact, even today, you know, having some general conversations with the mayor as far as, you know, what the future looks like. And we realize that, you know, looking at our area of impact and even our city limits, you know, we need to look towards eventually having substation type options, you know, south of the tracks and obviously north, as you know, since we're going as far as Amity, And so that's something that, you know, preliminary have not had the chance yet to have to look at our impact fees and see if that there's a lot of things that are on my list to look at, and as we plan for the future, make sure I can, you know, be part of that conversation. I'm sorry, right now I just don't have a ton of information yet.
No, and I understand. I guess I'm just trying to express my concern.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure you've thought of it. I mean, I'm sure you don't need me to tell you.
Yeah,
that's one thing that we've been talking about. Actually, we've had several conversations about that as the population grows and the need for more officers comes. We will address that, and obviously with the growth, our budget for policing will increase so that we'll be able to provide that service. But we actually had that discussion today about possibly working with fire district and maybe having a combination fire station, police station, so that we're using the making the best use of public funds for one facility for multiple organizations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. Anything further?
Mayor,
yes.
If I could have the floor. I guess this is probably directed towards our city engineer. Our well, I believe, out there on 10 Mile and Columbia in that vicinity is taunted, if I remember right. Will we have available water for that subdivision out on the north end there?
Yes, there is. At the present time, there's a 12-inch water line right across from the water treatment plant on 10 Mile and Lake Hazel, which is not too far from where they're at.
That's coming from the other wells within the city. It's not coming from the well that's on Columbia. That's we're having problems.
No, that one is not. But we have a project that ties, if I remember correctly, ties the well in with the rest of our infrastructure. It's going under construction this year. And there's other project that I have online for next year to bring water on the north side off of Linda, actually, all the way down.
Okay.
As a second source. That was one of the concerns about this subdivision due to the size, is we need a second source of water. And right now there's only one source, it's on 10 Mile. So we're going to bring a second one coming down Linda.
So with all the new subdivisions that are going east of the Meridian Highway, north of the city, we have water capacity for this one?
At the moment, yes. The water master plan was just completed. I have it, actually was delivered today to my office.
Okay.
And we have, if the river construction goes the way it's going, we have until about 2023 before we have another well. So we're doing pretty well at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. I have one more question, I think, maybe directed to Tim. Throughout this 123 pages, Tim, I see Ada County Highways talking about a cooperative development agreement in regards to Lake Hazel Road, 10 Mile, 10 Mile and Amity and Linder. What is the procedure there? It looks like they do not endorse the development until you have that cooperative development agreement with them. It looks like they want a roundabout on Lake Hazel and 10 Mile, and then traffic lights at Amity and Linder and 10 Mile and Amity. Am I reading that correctly?
Mayor, council members, I'm Tim Eck. I'm the applicant, 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Eagle, Idaho. To answer your question, Mr. Cardoza, you know, traffic impact studies on these large subdivisions are intensive. And then you stack three and four subdivisions on top of each other and they get even more complicated. They're putting checkpoints in at every so many lots. They're going to reevaluate all of the requirements that are set forth because a requirement that this subdivision might trigger, another subdivision might trigger sooner. So the multiple improvements are going to be in a cooperative development agreement with the highway district as we go through the project and we get to a certain number of lots, a certain improvement, be it a roundabout or signalization has to occur. In most cases, the roundabouts are tough because they take much more right away. We're adamantly in favor of doing the permanent improvements than temporary improvements if right away can be secured. If they're in their capital improvement plan, then they also tend to be subject to reimbursement agreements with Ivy District. But you'll see that on this plat. We have it at Spring Hill. We'll have it at Renaissance. All these bigger plats are going to have a lot of checkpoints as we go through them because it's just, you know, this is a 10-year build-out. And there may be conditions that this subdivision is not intended to trigger at phase 8, but because other phases on other projects might require that improvement by the time we get to phase 5. So we have various checkpoints through the traffic impact study and with the development agreement with the highway district. The things will be reevaluated after so many lots on each project, and there will be, you know, points we get to where we have to do certain off-site improvements.
Okay.
Temporary signalization, roundabouts, as you see.
Is that getting common with ACHD, these cooperative development agreements, they call them?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You know, they're, it's speed sensitive because most all of these improvements are already in their capital improvement plan at some point. You know, the question is if we trigger the requirement 6 months before they're going to do it, will they require us to do it? Probably not, because they're allowed to go over their, you know, preferred design criteria. But if we're hitting that requirement 6 years before they plan to do it, then we'll be putting in certain improvements to keep the traffic flowing.
Okay. One last question. You're looking at putting right-of-ways along that power line.
No, the power line has an easement.
Easement
for property.
For walking or track.
We'll put pathways.
Public ways.
Yes.
Those are high voltage lines running through. I couldn't tell you the voltage of them. Do you have any concern of the people that will be using that maybe a kid would fly a kite or do something on there that could jeopardize somebody's life? I mean, you're making it accessible to the public. Is there any responsibility acceptance by you guys for allowing the public to walk that area?
Mayor, council member, that is an interesting question and one that's not been posed to me before. What I find is I'm pretty familiar with this development in Columbia Village where a friend of mine lives, and they've got one of these high voltage power lines out there, and it's right in his backyard. I mean, his fence stops just outside of the easement, but he's not 100 feet away from it. So I suppose, you know, flying a kite around a power line, and somebody dies, there's going to be some attorneys that get involved, and they're going to make a lot of money. But I'm not sure that what we were looking for was to always protect people from the nth incident, but what we can do is provide a walking path for a corridor that people can utilize on a day-to-day basis. So I think that at least may be reasonable. Of course, I'm not an attorney, and should Tim's attorney advise him differently, then we'll be back here, I suppose. But it's not prohibited from the easement that Idaho Power has in there. They prohibit things that are flammable. I wasn't really comfortable saying, let's put a swing set up in there. So that's not what I advised them to do, but I said, this is what we can do. And just because it seems appropriate from other developments that have occurred that I'm familiar with. So maybe that's worth looking into. Luckily, that's about 12, 14 phases down the road. And so we have some time to maybe tackle that issue.
I think it's going to be an ongoing problem as we go east and west along that power line with other subdivisions as to the potential of a public nuisance of some kind to.
I would, my uninformed legal opinion would be because it's ultimately Idaho Power, whatever power company owns the lines, that they would ultimately be able to say this is what you can and can't do directly under them based on their liability concerns. So if they don't have an issue with walkways being built, my assumption is that there's probably not an issue because they would be the ones to raise it. They would be the ones with the liability in terms of electrocuting somebody.
Are you being required to sign any kind of a waiver of non-responsibility to Idaho Power for that right away?
Mayor, council member, no. There's been no specific requirement related by Idaho Power for a waiver.
Okay.
And just to maybe expand on that little project, I got to thinking about other right-of-ways that we typically utilize, and in many cases we use large irrigation facilities people hike and bike on all the time, ride their horses on them. You know, I live right behind the New York Canal, and, you know, if somebody dies, it's kind of their own fault. This is the way it's always been. Now, I'm not saying that's right, wrong, and different, but these are amenities that have been treated. In many cases, I've been up against the Boise Project Board of Control trying to get people to be able to walk on those things, and they say no, and, you know, we kind of go round and round. But luckily, over the years, I've had a few facilities that we've been able to pipe, increase the safety for pedestrians through there, but some of them remain open and people still utilize them. So, yeah, I'm not an attorney. I can't answer the legal question, but that's my experience is what I'm relating.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
I have one question, actually, for once. During the project, if you're starting along the 10-mile side and working east, is the rest of that ground going to be maintained as farm ground by whoever's currently farming it till you get to those phases so that we don't have, you know, a big weedy mess on 90 acres of the 130 or whatever? Is that the intent?
Mayor, council member, it has been typical for the owner to lease the property out or continue its agricultural operations to the extent possible.
Right.
Sometimes as we move forward in these projects, we actually have to remove the irrigation facilities to service it as we go forward. But we maintain the irrigation facilities discharges to downstream users throughout the development. So sometimes it's continued agricultural operations throughout the life of the project until we get to that phase. Other times it's just simply not possible, and then those the sites maintained to keep the weeds down and stuff as you know, a few times a year to keep the land, because marketing is important for the development. So,
okay, thank you.
Okay, anything further? Okay, the question is rightfully before council.
Mayor, I've got one last question. I'm sorry. Are there EDUs available since this was not in the... there's plenty of EDUs. Okay.
The gentleman over there wants to know on the record, the gentleman proposing the project owns the majority of the EDUs and is able to transfer from one project to the other as he sees fit.
Okay. Answers my question, Tim. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
All right. Anybody else can jump in and do this on one of these if you want, so it's not always me. It looks like the proposed subdivision meets with the goals of our comp plan. It was already designated medium density on our planning map, so we're not changing anything there. It contributes to our interest in a mix of residential-type dwellings. It also is adding some open spaces for us. It's contributing to the walkways and kind of a connected CUNA that we are hoping for. Let's see. Apologies. It looks like it comports with the portions of Idaho Code, would not create a demonstrable adverse impact to the quality of emergency service or delivery of services or impose substantial additional costs to current residents. It looks like it's in compliance with all CUNA city codes, not likely to cause any adverse impacts to the environment or that sort of thing. And our utility services are in proximity to the site and appear suitable and adequate for residential purposes. So let's see. So then I would move we approve. Sorry, I'm trying to find where I am here. Case numbers 17-01-ZC and 17-01-S. Based on the facts in the memo, everything we discussed today, and with the conditions of approval listed in the packet.
Second. Motion is made and seconded to approve 17-01ZC and 17-01S. Is there any further discussion from council? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next item is a public hearing and consideration to approve 16-04 CPM and 1613 AN for Indian Creek Sports. And again, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone who wishes to testify that did not get a chance to sign up? Okay, thank you very much. Troy, you may have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Just for the record, Troy Buchanan, Planner 3, Field Planning and Zoning Department. Just want to introduce the project. This is a request for a comprehensive plan map amendment from C1 zone commercial designation. I'm sorry, I'm gonna restart. This is a comp plan map amendment change request to change the map from high density residential to commercial uses. And it is also an annexation request as the property does touch existing city limits. It is located on the west side of Highway 69 or Meridian Road, and it's about a half a mile south of Columbia Road and a half a mile north of Hubbard Road. It really is right where Mason Creek Street will eventually make its east-west connection point right there at Meridian Road. The applicant is Troy Todd with Indian Creek Sports, and I will turn it over to the applicant for his presentation, and then I'll return.
Okay, thank you very much. Troy, if you would just say your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Troy Todd. I own Indian Creek Sports. I live at 6029 Sunrise Avenue in CUNA, and I'm trying to expand our little boat lot.
Only over there.
Only over there, yeah.
Instead of over there.
Yeah. I haven't sold our other lot yet, so we may try to lease it out and still have funding to start building. I little bit of luck. I'd like to start building sometime this fall on it. I want to have a nice asphalted front and nice fences up front that you can see through, and then have fences in the back where you can't see to hide all the shop and all the boats and storage stuff that we will have. We've kind of outgrown our little spot, and unfortunately half the CUNA doesn't know I have a boat lot in town. And I think with the exposure on Meridian Road, we will start to bring a few more boats and business into the city of CUNA.
All right. Questions for Troy?
Mayor, one question. Troy, how long have you been in business in Kena?
2 weeks. No.
I've been a long time.
I lived here December of 1999. 2000, I opened up the lot. I had to sub it out or lease other pieces of ground in Kena. 2003, I became a commercial residence here, or a commercial entity. We try to use all the local NAPA, Skew Machine, Rainy Creek Auto, as much as we can. We try to support a lot of the baseball teams and different things in the city.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Troy?
Is that your shop on the Meridian Highway with the roof caved in?
That would be what I bought, yes. That one will be coming down.
It will?
Okay. Yeah, we'll be going to work with planning and zoning on building a nice storefront application where it fits in with like the Les Schwab's, the Walgreens, et cetera. I don't know if I can afford to do it in one phase or if we're going to have to do it in multiple phases, probably multiple phases, but I want to build as much of a nice and presentable building as we can at the very beginning. I would like indoor showrooms. I would like to have kind of up in the front on one of the little wings, a little kind of a detail area and a place where we install fish finders and little stuff like that and make it pleasant to view and look at. And then behind the back fence, I want to have the back shop and continue to have the full service boat repair that we have.
What about demos at Mason Creek?
Probably we'll get scolded on that.
You can always test drive them out there.
Yeah. It'd be an adventure, especially when we're out
down there. Okay, anything further for Troy? Thank you very much. Okay, this is a public hearing. Once again, was there anybody who wished to testify who did not get a chance to sign up on the sheet? Okay, I have Rodney Baldwin signed up to testify in favor. If you would just state your name and address for the record, sir.
Hey, I'm Rodney Baldwin. I live at 4066 North Hawthorne Way in Boise, and I'm Troy's engineer and surveyor working with him on the project. And so I just came along if you guys have any questions of a technical matter.
Okay.
We're in the middle of the process of planning the project. And so it just depends on what Troy comes up with and working with planning and zoning, just what we do. And I have the copy of the return on from the city engineer and also Ada County Highway District, and we'll be working with those to make sure we get our grading and drainage and our roadways constructed as they require.
Okay, very good. So
that's all I have.
Any more technical questions than you were asking, Troy? All right. Thank you. That's all I had to sign up to testify. So if we have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Bubin-Landerhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Okay. This is time for debate for City Council. Any questions? Comments?
Okay. I know this request appears to be consistent with the comp plan, although the application requests a change in zoning designation. We had kind of considered Meridian Road for a lot of commercial development. And I think we frankly welcome all commercial development as long as it's not like grossly out of whack. I think, let's see. It meets with multiple sections of the comp plan, in calling for a mix of commercial uses. I believe, we also have the potential to extend Mason Creek Street in the future. It hopefully this will get big enough that we'll have some additional employment opportunities maybe that would be added. It looks like there aren't any issues with regard to Idaho State Code analysis. It's not in conflict with the policies of our comp plan or anything like that. So I would conclude that the site is physically suitable for commercial development. And I move we approve case numbers 16-04-CPM and 16-13-AN based on the facts in the packet, the comp plan, the city code, the record before us, the presentation tonight, and including the conditions of approval as listed in the packet.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve 16-04-CPM and 16-13-AN. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. I know that's been a long time coming for you. The next item on the agenda is consideration to approve 17-02-LS lot split for David and Tawny Limes and Trevor Kessner, planner. Or Troy will do.
I'll be standing in for Trevor Kessner tonight. He had another engagement that was a little more pressing, so.
Oh, party.
I didn't say that. I'm not going to deny it, but I'm not going to say that. So the application tonight is this lot split by Dave and Tawny Limesand. It's located just south of here on Ash Avenue. And anyway, the city engineer has weighed in on this and given notable conditions that are required. And Trevor also let me know that many of the conditions that are in the suggested or the recommended decision for the council come directly out of the lot split code. The applicant is also aware that a memorandum of understanding, which is required by the lot split code, they've had a chance to read that. It was created in part by staff and with the city attorney. And with that memorandum of understanding is the requirement to connect to services when they're available. But because of the unique nature of this site, it is well outside the 300-foot radius, 300-foot distance from existing services, and so they would not be required to put those services in now or connect at this point, just because it would be extremely financially expensive. So, but they have had a chance to read that memorandum, and I don't know how many questions I could answer, but I'll stand for whatever you have.
Okay, questions for Troy. Make it hard.
Okay. This is traditionally an R4. Once we split, does each lot then become R4?
The zoning is not being changed at all, so R4 would remain.
For each lot when you split it. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Further questions for Troy? Thank you. Question is rightfully before council.
I'm getting to that part of my packet. I move we approve case number 17-02-LS with the conditions of approval that are outlined in the packet and which it sounds like have been discussed with the applicant.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 17-02-LS. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item B, consideration to approve resolution number R40-2017, amending R32-2016, changing members of the Economic Development Committee. So we've had a couple of members that have dropped off because of personal reasons, and we've had two here that have, one at least, that's been interested in this position for quite some time. When those were presented to the other members of the Economic Development Committee, all those that were present in that meeting voted unanimously to put these names before council. So we have those before you tonight for your approval based on the recommendation of the Economic Development Committee members.
I move we approve resolution number R40-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R40-2017. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Consideration to approve resolution number R41-2017, approving Thewson Construction Incorporated change orders 1, 2, and 3 for the Lake Hazel Sewer Main Project. Antonio.
Good evening, Antonio Fum, TC Engineer. The Lake Hazel Sewer Project is at about 10 miles in Lake Hazel. The project is right now on hold due to the inability to bore underneath the creek while there is waterfront. So we need to wait until October to do that. There were three change orders on this project. Two of them were already approved, but they never went through the proper process, which is number one and number two. Number one was to add an actual water line inside the bore instead of leave the bore empty for a cost of roughly, I think it was $7,000, give or take. Number two was an extension of time that was requested by a contractor. And I wasn't involved in either one of those change orders. Those were long before. Number three is a change order due to some conditions that were found at the site. We used as-built drawing to estimate the depth of the footing in the existing bridge. When the contractor went to bore, he hit one of the footings. I guess the footing was a lot lower than expected. So they had to move the bore back, lower the bore, and there's a cost associated with that. And the second portion of it is when they dig out the material for the trenches, they couldn't use it as a backfill. It was non-suitable material. Once it got wet, it moved out. They had to import a bunch of feed run to fill in the project. There were a lot of other items that are not on your list. The original change order started about $90,000 from the contractor. A lot of these items were, once we met with the contractor, a lot of these items are in the specs that is on him to address. I just didn't thought he could get away with it. And I wouldn't take it away. He thought that with the circumstances that were, in our opinion, those were covered by the specs. These two items actually had a legitimate claim for it. The total cost of the change order once we settled is about $34,000 for this change order number three. The material was imported to the site. I have all the load tickets. It's pretty much 200 pages worth of handwritten notes. We went through all those to verify that his number was correct with what Travis had on his book and what was submitted. So the numbers are right. So I recommend, if possible, to approve it.
Any okay. Questions? Thank you. Questions for Antonio.
Antonio, how far along are we on the project?
Right now it's on hold. It's on hold until October. We need to do one more. There's one more left that we're unable to do due to time. There's about, I think, $40,000 left into the project, plus all the damage.
So once they bore it, I'm just trying to figure out, are we just at the start of this project, or are we at more at the end? Or? Oh, okay, that's what I was trying to
The total project was a total of four bores, okay. Plus some sewer line.
They were able to do three. There's a fourth one. They weren't able to get in time.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is once the water is out of the canal, so they're going to come in, and they have about 30 days to do the last bore.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I move we approve resolution number R41-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R41-2017. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council on this one, please?
Council President Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Item D, discussion on leasing a portion of the Anderson property for parking. Bobby Withrow.
Mayor, Council, I'm coming before you tonight to discuss an issue that we've had on Shrubber Road for many years, parking. This year with Boise River possibly not having a float here at all, I see an influx of people coming to Indian Creek because it's always been accessible and it's controlled a little bit better than Indian Creek, a little bit better than Boise River. I did include a memorandum kind of explaining everything. I'll go over it briefly. A couple years ago, Sid Anderson the Anderson family bought some property over off Shrubber Road, and they wanted to get services out there, and they wanted to trade property for services, and the city just wasn't close enough, and it wasn't feasible at the time. So when we had our record year of rainfall and snow and water everywhere, I started thinking and was like, well, if Boise can't have a float season, then all those people are going to come to CUNA. So maybe we need to be proactive and try to get somewhere that people can go park and be off the road and not worry about getting ran over. I did talk with the Andersons. They are open to leasing us 4 acres, and it would go. We do things in phases. And then I haven't contacted the police or fire yet because I wanted to get your guys' approval to keep proceeding to see if we can't work something out here.
And then as part of this, I think that since it's not contiguous to the city, we can't purchase property like that, but we can lease. Is that correct?
We could purchase it.
Mayor, we could purchase the property. It doesn't have to be contiguous to the city. An example would be Boise bought that property for the gun range out.
Oh, correct.
West
okay.
of town. So okay. we could be able to do that. It was just the appearance and the use and the lack of services at this time, infrastructure services.
Okay, thank you.
Have questions?
Yes. Questions.
What do they currently use the property for?
Nothing. It's being there and weeds are growing.
Okay. So do we anticipate, in addition to the cost to actually lease it, do we anticipate any costs associated with restoring it to any certain condition at the end of the season?
Restoring it to the current condition, no. Actual leaving it as parking, because the goal is to purchase this property and eventually do like Barber Park does, where people can go and rent tubes and whatever they need to kind of float the creek. And then if we did that, we can kind of police it better and have people sign waivers and be insurance-wise be a little bit more prepared.
So are we anticipating then purchasing the entirety of their property or a portion of it at some point in the future?
The Andersons want to keep an acre to build on, so we would be purchasing about 4.2 or something acres.
Okay. And 4 acres. Do we have an idea when, at what point they would be interested in selling versus leasing?
They're interested right now.
Okay.
We haven't hit the budget process yet, so I didn't want to come in front of council and ask for money to buy property yet.
Yeah. I respect whatever you think would be the best way to pursue it, but I would be curious about, I guess in my head, kind of the what should we pay to lease if we're going to buy it anyway? Like, should we just go ahead and buy it versus do we need this year's like a litmus test to show like what our busiest year might be, how urgent a need parking is, and therefore, you know, given a limited budget, whether we should be expending funds on purchasing something now if the demand isn't necessarily that high, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So anyway, there you go. There's my thoughts.
So, Bobby, it is the old, the milk barn and all that area. Is that the mm-hmm. spot you're talking?
Okay. Yep.
My grandpa rolling his grave, he built that back in the day.
Well, we were planning on keeping most of that.
Oh, good. And then, I don't remember what my other question was. Never mind.
Grandpa scared you?
Yeah, apparently.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
Bobby, what's your initial cost of... You probably have to do some sort of grading, clearing.
Yeah, we're going to have to go through there and do some grading and do some upgrade. Luckily, a lot of it in front is concrete, and we can still use that. It's more on the eastern side where it's a bunch of weeds right now. We would have to bring in, I was going to say, some recycled asphalt for this year. I'm anticipating, with the cost of rent and everything, $6,000 to $7,000. This year to get everything we need to do, fences around everything so people aren't trespassing, the recycled asphalt and the signage that we need to kind of help people in there.
You're anticipating, obviously, until you look at a more roughly $7,000 to make mm-hmm. this happen and provide an entry point for the people to float the river and keep
yeah.
them off the main road.
And we won't have the no trespassing yeah. issue anymore.
And increase the safety over there by having them not running across the street and all that.
I have one follow-up on Pat's question, which
okay.
is if we are paying to, like, grade the land and stuff, could we get some sort of agreement that basically says if they don't end up selling it to us, we get some sort of reimbursement for that? I'm not saying that they would have any nefarious intention, but to the extent we go in and do some sort of improvement, something that could be construed as an improvement or make the land more appealable to other interested parties. I just don't want the taxpayers of CUNA to fund. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'll get with Richard on that to make sure we can figure something out.
Cool.
Okay. Anything further?
What is the capacity of the park in there?
I kind of did a little drawing rendering. I can get about 44 cars.
You know, most of them are going to have a trailer behind them. The ones I see parked along Strobel. Will Ada County then rescind the parking along Strobel on the east and west sides?
That I'm not sure of. I was going to get a hold of Ada County and after the meeting and let them know our intent of trying to get parking over there in hopes to actually have them or see if they'd be willing to help us with some of the costs. But I will ask them that question.
Okay. The milk and parlor, you said, is going to stay there in that vicinity?
Mm-hmm.
It will belong to the laws. We won't have any responsibility for that building there?
No, not at this time. When it is encompassed in the property that we do want to purchase in the future.
Okay.
I'm
just worried that if we put a lot there and then it's vandalized, are we going to have a responsibility for broken windows and stuff like that because we're leasing the adjoining property? Richard?
We'll make sure.
Council Member Cardoza will make sure that's addressed in the lease.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
Okay, anything further?
Yeah, I take that back. How come there wasn't a schematic or any kind of, under 7D, any kind of explanation on my agenda? It just said discussion on leasing a portion of the Anderson property. There was no, or am I missing a page or something?
There's no memo.
There isn't?
No.
You forgot to send it over. I didn't know you had one.
I sent it over. That's how I got the one on my computer. It was sent to the clerks. I had a memorandum and two pictures.
All right, I'm starting to fight. This is good. This is good.
I promise.
Oh, look.
So I will get those sent to you guys.
So you trying to backpedal out of this now?
I'm trying to backpedal a little bit.
I thought he just wanted permission so nobody hit him.
Yeah. Actually, Bob, I think it's a good idea because that Stroba Road is very dangerous. Kids are running in and out of those cars, and if you're going down Stroba, you don't see those kids until they dart out. Mm-hmm. If we can get those kids off there, I would like to see Ada County put up no parking then to avoid a child getting killed there. So.
Commissioner Goldthorpe actually approached me about that yesterday afternoon. Good. At another meeting, and so we had a short discussion about it that I haven't had time to talk to Bobby about. But
do they want to contribute any funds to this?
Well, he didn't really get into it that far, but he was worried about people getting run over. So
you know, it's funny because
there's a possibility.
Two years ago, they went and widened the road there so people could park there. Now they're going to put signs up, no parking. Got a problem, phone Bobby. Yeah, good idea.
Thanks, Richard.
See if we can get money from them.
Yeah.
Even a little bit. I mean, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Item 8A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2017-07, Robert and Catherine Law Annexation. This is an ordinance annexing certain real property, to wit, parcel number S131012060, situated in the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the city of Cuna, into the city of Cuna, Idaho, establishing the zoning classification of said real property, directing that copies of this ordinance be filed as provided by law, and providing an effective date. I think this is something we can fast track if you would wish.
Okay. I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2017-07.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to consider waiving the three readings of ordinance 2017-07. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2017-07.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance 2017-07. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardozo?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve a summary publication of ordinance 2017-07.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance 2017-07. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries and will become law upon publication. Item 8B, consideration to approve ordinance number 2017-08, amending CUNA City Code 10-1, police regulations, adding a new section. This is an ordinance of the City Council, CUNA, Idaho, amending Chapter 1, Title 10, CUNA City Code, titled Police Regulations, as follows. Adding a new section, Section 5, titled to Disorderly Conduct, and providing an effective date. Would Council like a little background on this one?
Yes.
You're good? Please.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, it'd be good.
All right.
No, I mean, I would love some background.
Oh, okay.
If you don't mind.
So police ran into a situation. Do you want to go ahead and address it?
Sure, Mayor. Members of the council. It was about 3 to 4 weeks ago we had a call of a 22-year-old that was acting kind of, we weren't sure if he was under the influence or what was really going on, and ended up getting, I think, a total of 4 calls on that individual. It kind of accumulated with, we offered rides, tried to get him back to the Lineman's College to get some help. And he, you know, his behavior kind of got worse as he walked from Arbor Ridge Park into town. And again, I think the third contact that the deputies had with him, you know, at that time, we weren't sure if we had an intoxicated person on the road, because got to be a little bit careful with that code. And so what we ended up doing was because he was found still being very loud. The original call at Arbor Ridge was when a citizen called in and said he was being, you know, disorderly, basically. We tried to get his cooperation again, tried to offer him a ride home. Bottom line is that as we're handling other different calls, ended up getting calls on him. I think the third one, we ended up reaching him. He walked through, scared some people at the Chevron where we had the armed robbery a couple days ago, and some people called in and said, this guy's really scary, yelling, being just generally disorderly. We were able to contact him at a person's house there as he's walking into towards downtown. He was in the canal before it filled in with water and was on there right away, though, and so we were able to get them to sign as a signing party, which allowed us to finally make that arrest. Until then, we were they were just really searching through the code for something to do with this individual that did not want our help of getting a ride to somebody's house. And so as we looked more into the code, realized that maybe that was an area that needed some additional options for us. And so this disorderly code that the county actually had, and Richard was nice enough to make sure it's going to work within our code as well, but it gives us that option for these kind of situations where, you know, just generally the person's causing problems, but we don't have a signing party. This time we were able to get a signing party, but until then we were trying to buy some time with him, and he was begging us to arrest him, and it was just a really awkward situation for the deputies.
So basically, unless a citizen made the arrest, they couldn't arrest.
Yeah, the state, the police
didn't have the authority to do that. So that then puts a citizen into having to sign this, so that now they're in the middle of, if they have to go to court, they have to go to court, whereas normally the police could just handle this type of situation. So
yeah,
this helps protect not only the police officers, but the citizens that have to sign that warrant.
Absolutely. Our hands were kind of tied to the state code of disturbing the peace, which does require a signing party. So this will help with that, having that requirement.
Thank you for the explanation.
Thanks, Chief.
Mayor, I had a question. I have no issue with the ordinance itself. I've noticed that other cities have it, Meridian, Boise, and such. I know the other cities have added some additional things to their ordinance regarding lighting cigarettes when there says no smoking, stuff like that. Is that something that you, I guess, Chief, you have the, in another code somewhere else, you have the capability to take care of that as other stuff, or do we need to add those type of things to this too? I'm just curious why other cities have put that stuff into their code and such.
One thing that we talked about, Ada County Sheriff's Department has taken on staff a guy that actually does this kind of stuff, goes through codes and ordinances, and we're going to have him take a look at ours to make sure it matches the county's, so that they're working under the umbrella of the same. They don't have to figure out which law applies where, and so they're going to take a little more forensic look at the rest of this to see if there's other areas that we're weak in. And
yeah, you know, as far as the smoking question, that's a great one. I did notice a few other things that were added, and when I asked the officers at the police station if they've ever, you know, came across that situation, we haven't yet. Not to say that we wouldn't, where we would have that need to take that level of enforcement action, but so at this time, we didn't have that to the request today. Something again, our legal advisor at the sheriff's office, Terry Durden, came out and met with the mayor and I, and he's, again, we're going to put together that committee, and that's something we can definitely address and see if there's going to be a need.
Thank you.
Okay,
I've got a question for Richard. I really like your girdle. I think it really looks good on you. My question is, a railroad car. Since the railroad is private property, do we want our city police officers on private property to evict somebody from a railroad car? Or is there a specific reason for the railroad car to be on there? It's under C. automobile, truck, railroad car, or other similar vehicles. The railroad would be private property. I don't know if I want our police officers endangering their life for a railroad episode.
If you look at that whole paragraph, it deals with both public and private property, the structures and stuff like that. And I guess we can talk to the railroad and ask them. Certainly they may contact the law enforcement here if there's somebody on the railroad car, so that gives us the option to do that. We have trespassers on the cars on the railroad, and they come to a stop. So I would say let's leave it in. Probably more likely to come up than not.
Wait. Chief, do you want your police officers responding to railroad cars? I mean, it's dangerous. Those, first off, you've got railroads moving, you've got trains moving.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in that situation, and I may not be factoring all the different situations that might come up, but I believe in that situation we would have the railroad ask us. You know, they'd be a signing party on that type of situation, and so we'd be maybe more just like we have a trespassing, for example, at Paul's. You know, we, you know, I think it's going to be that type of situation where they call in, they're willing to be the signing party.
Okay.
And make that citizen's arrest if that's what's needed.
Okay. How much latitude, Chief, is there on A, accosting other people, persons in a public place or in any place open to the public for the purpose of begging or soliciting? How much latitude are you going to give on that one?
Yeah, I don't, you know, again, talking to the officers at the police station, as far as their experience with that, it's pretty rare when we have people, you know, begging around town and accosting people to try to get those funds. And so, as far as answering that question, I would hope we'd use the good discretion and, you know, the spirit of the law, you know, with just finding that good balance as far as what the public expects us to do.
Let me ask you this. Last weekend we had the firemen out with a boot. That's soliciting or begging to a certain degree.
But it doesn't prohibit soliciting or begging. It prohibits accosting people for the purpose of soliciting or begging.
For the purpose of begging or soliciting. Okay.
So it wouldn't keep, like, door-to-door stuff. It wouldn't necessarily prohibit that. It, like, goes over the normal, like, I've just asked you politely. You've said no. I'm going away. Like, it's the continuing harassment and getting in people's faces.
Okay.
Okay. Anything further? Thank you, Chief.
You bet.
Thanks.
I assume we want to fast track?
I think we can fast track this. I think actually the citizens would be appreciative of this one.
Better serve to have it on the book sooner rather than later. I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2017-08. All those in favor and aye, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2017-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2017-08. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2017-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance Number 2017-08. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. That will become law upon publication. Does anybody have anything they wish to announce?
No.
Okay. We need to have an executive session, so I'd like to adjourn to...
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing a personnel matter.
Second.
Okay. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes. Okay, and we will need Richard Roats and Bob Bachman. Other than that,